Welcome to Slightly Offsides, your perfect game plan for all things college and professional football. Hosted by Dre and Mike.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Slightly Offsides. Two out of the three co-hosts are with us today. Greg is with me. Dre is not feeling too hot. But we will do our best to, you know, pick up the slack for him and hopefully discuss what is a crazy, crazy week five of football. So welcome back to Slightly Offsides, presented by Better Edge. Play the game without getting played. Greg, just, you know, before we even get into the meat here, what was kind of your takeaway from week five?
A lot of turmoil. A lot of those bottom half of the poll teams got knocked out. Pretty crazy week overall. Nothing too crazy from the top, I would say. There's some prime matchups like, you know, Washington, UCLA, that were great games. Kind of shows who's at the top of the pecking order of certain conferences. But, you know, not the craziest week in college football, but not a bad one nonetheless.
Yeah, and going all the way to the top of the list here, I think one thing that I took away from this week is Georgia. Georgia is not the big juggernaut we thought they would be, you know, just kind of after they rolled over Oregon. They've kind of stumbled a little bit these past 2 weeks, and we'll get into that a little bit later on, but that was something that kind of stood out to me as well. Just a lot of questions at the top of the table, and just across the nation, really, in the Power Five conferences and in other conferences. A lot of question marks, a lot of intrigue, which definitely, you know, only makes us more interested. It's part of why we love college football. If it was predictable, it wouldn't be fun. So, but we'll get right into it. Greg, let's just start going through our winners and losers. I'll have you, if you have one off the top of your head, I'll let you kick it off. If not, I'll save you some time.
I'll go Bama as a big winner. You lose Bryce Young, you know, pretty early in the game. Jalen Milroe comes in. He looks really good. I remember reading in the, you know, in the spring, kind of compared to Lamar Jackson and Mike Vick, sort of Bama's secret weapon. And, you know, he iced the game for them against a pretty good Arkansas team that we've been raving about all year. So impressive performance against, you know, very formidable defense. Jahmyr Gibbs also had a great game. But, you know, people were a little bit down on Bama after their struggles against Texas, but this was a statement victory for them. They're definitely going, you know, definitely playoff contenders. We'll see how they look, you know, coming down to the wire here soon. But, you know, very impressive win for them.
All right, my winner here is going to be UCLA. You kind of touched on it a little bit in the episode preview, but and more specifically than just UCLA, I'm going to go with Dorian Thompson-Robinson. Okay, DTR. I mean, yep. That guy, like, talk about somebody who was highly recruited, highly touted out of high school, and kind of just for all intents and purposes fell off the map when he got to UCLA due to just the team struggling and the environment around him. And so kind of just went, like, under the radar for the last few years. And now paying off, the experience is paying off. You're starting to see some of that talent as he is now surrounded by a little bit better of an ensemble. And I think that really came to fruition for him in this game against Washington. It was a game really that start to finish, like, he was running the show for UCLA. Of course, everybody heard about the hurdle, the crazy hurdle he had, right? But his game was so much more than that on Saturday. He played completely and very, very just passionately. Like, he is the reason why they won that game. And I think moving forward, UCLA now puts themselves in a good position. They're 2-0 in the Pac-12, 5-0 on the year. They're in a position to wreak havoc in the Pac-12, and potentially even continue to climb up the ranks if, you know, they're for real. They have a good game this week coming up against, I believe it's Utah, but we'll get a chance to see kind of how for real that team is and how sticky DTR is as, you know, an experienced starter who's starting to show things. And I think, honestly, Greg, something we'll touch on maybe later in this episode is this is just another example, and we're starting to see this pop up more frequently in college football, of experienced quarterbacks just putting their team on their backs. We saw it so far this year. We've already seen it with Jordan Travis. Okay, we saw it with Chase Bryce in App State. And now we're starting to see it a little bit with DTR, as well as Adrian Martinez at Kansas State. So just kind of seems to be a sub-theme of the year. UCLA, DTR, first winner of the week for me.
Yeah, and to touch on a few of those points, I think the past few years we've gotten accustomed to, you know, these blue chip type players stepping in year one, making an instant impact. And, you know, a lot of those guys are Heisman finalists. You know, last year, CJ Stroud and Bryce Young were the top two guys at QB. But then you have guys like Spencer Rattler that underperform a little bit. You know, he had so much hype going into last year. But sometimes it's nice to have that experience at QB. Even look at teams like Penn State with Sean Clifford. You know, you might not have the most upside with some of those guys. They might never be NFL starters, but experience is very important in college football, and sometimes it's underrated, especially when you compare it to like how highly ranked your recruiting classes are. But you know, looking at the Pac-12 as well, it's a very interesting conference this year. You got a lot of good teams in there. You got UCLA, you got Washington, USC, Utah, Oregon. Washington State is a sleeper. We'll see if they're for real this week, against big matchup against USC. They're very interested to follow the Pac-12 for the rest of this year and see how, you know, sort themselves out.
Yeah, absolutely. And so my first loser of the week, I'm going to go with the elephant in the room here, even though they won the game, is Georgia. And the reason for that being, again, kind of touched on it in the preview, but Georgia basically didn't show up for the first 3.5 quarters of this game. Like, if they don't have the last two drives that they have to score touchdowns in the fourth quarter, they're losing this game and they're only putting 12 points on the board. Like, Missouri from start to finish, and frankly, even if you look at it the other way, right, if Missouri could have did something more with those drives, they would have put Georgia out of this game early. Like, they were controlling the game for maybe 50 or so out of the 60 minutes. And Georgia's talent just kind of wore them down at the end. Obviously, like, they had some big chunk plays at the end with Kendall Milton and such. So, I mean, I just think that, to me, if I'm looking at this game, right, as a CFP analyst or just in general as a fan, this is a Missouri team that we saw struggle against Auburn, like, horribly the week previously. Like, this is not a good Missouri team. So, in back-to-back weeks for Georgia to look this sloppy, this unrefined against a Kent State team and a Missouri team who, quite frankly, are both the very best thing we could say about either of those teams is that they're mediocre. It's not a good look for Georgia. And so they're definitely going to have to fix that as they start to head towards the meat of their schedule and what seems to be a much deeper SEC East than in previous years. We've seen Tennessee and Kentucky, as well as Tennessee and Kentucky. I think there's one or two others in there that are looking really good this year. So, I mean, don't want to sound the alarms yet for Georgia, but this is definitely not a good start as you head into SEC.
Yeah, and I mean, one game, you know, could be a fluke. Two could be the start of a trend. So, going to keep my eyes on them this weekend against Auburn. If they blow them out of the water, I don't think I would be too concerned. But if they, you know, if Auburn hangs around for a little bit, even if Georgia pulls ahead in the second half, I think that's a little bit, you know, of a red flag to me if I'm, you know, in the CFP playoff committee. But we'll see. I mean, they got a lot of, you know, big tests later in the season. So they got a few tune-up games to get warmed up for the meat of their SEC competition. So we'll see with them. For my loser, I'm going to go with Pitt. They drop a game to Georgia Tech, who just fired Jeff Collins. And I wasn't that high on Pitt this season. They had a few, you know, they beat WVU week one. They lost to Tennessee. I just didn't think they were going to recover from, you know, like losing Kenny Pickett and Jordan Addison. And like, I don't care if I don't think you're a good team. You should not be losing to Georgia Tech. You know, they don't even have a head coach right now. Their defense or their offense, you know, runs all over you with Jeff Sims, and their running back, forget his name, but he had like 150 yards rushing. No excuse for that if you're Pitt. You should be winning this game by a few scores.
Yeah, absolutely, 100% agree. There were a couple of games like that this week. Another one that is, I guess, kind of segueing into my second winner of the week, they kind of fell into that mold, was TCU Oklahoma. Now, Oklahoma has the really unfortunate issue, I guess, of being the second team that I've jinxed this year. So you can add them to the graveyards that I've put into college football. We had BYU, and now Oklahoma has continued that trend. So I'm sorry, Boomer Sooner Nation, for being too high on your team, I guess. Clearly I was wrong, because you guys got absolutely throttled by TCU. And for some reason, it, like, you look at that score and it's 31 points. And I watched that game, and like, it felt like it was worse than that. Like, Oklahoma just, now I know Dylan Gabriel went down. I know that, you know, the depth at QB maybe isn't quite what you want if you're Brent Venables, but 55 points. Like, the one thing that is inexcusable to me about this is the fact that Brent Venables is the head coach of Oklahoma. I cannot remember the last time he gave up 50 points in a game as just a defensive coach. So that's shocking to me. I don't know how much of this result, and we'll see moving forward, maybe even this week, how much of this result is more TCU is a really underrated team, or Oklahoma is a really overrated team, or a little bit of both. But TCU looked really good, especially Max Duggan. Their team just looked electric. And Oklahoma, it is a weird time in the Big 12.
Yeah, and right, I mean, now, regardless, I think TCU took the pedal off the gas a little bit too. They dropped 41 in the first half. They probably could have scored at will. You know, I don't care if Dylan Gabriel's in the game. Like, you can't win games when you can't stop the opposing team on offense, especially, like, not to knock on TCU, but they're not an offensive powerhouse the likes of, you know, Ohio State or like USC or some team like that. So I think this is a really big loss. And like you said, Brent Venables' defense is his calling card. So they got a lot of work to do. They got Texas this week. They're going to need some quick answers. But for me, my second winner of the week is going to be Oklahoma State. It kind of proved me wrong. I was rolling with Baylor. Baylor had a little bit of momentum heading into the game. I think this is kind of similar to what we were talking about earlier with Spencer Sanders, experienced QB. You know, his stats don't pop off the sheet, but he made plays when he needed to. And I think his leadership is kind of what, you know, propelled them to the victory over a pretty good Baylor defense. So we'll see. Oklahoma State's rolling so far this year, undefeated, 5-0, I believe. So maybe they're in the playoff race as a dark horse. So we'll see. You know, they got some tough matchups still to go, but they've looked really impressive so far.
Yeah, absolutely they have. And their defense, you know, after losing arguably one of the best defensive coordinators in the country in Jim Knowles, they reloaded with Derek Mason, and it clearly shows. I mean, other than that one quarter they had against Central Michigan to start the year, this defense has been statistically a top 15, top 20 defense. So they're playing at really a high level, and, you know, again, goes back to our earlier point about experienced quarterbacks. Spencer Sanders has been in that system now for seems like forever. And he's really utilizing that experience to just be a leader on the field, and it shows. I mean, they're definitely a deadly team right now. And, you know, with Baylor already has two losses, Texas already has two losses, Oklahoma, you know, already has, I think, two or even maybe three losses. Yeah, two losses. Right now, the Big 12 is Oklahoma State's to lose. And the guys who are nipping at their heels are teams that they're not usually thinking mm-hmm. about, right? Like TCU and Kansas. So they're in a really good position right now. Things have kind of worked out for them. The only thing that I think that could stop them moving forward is themselves. So they're just going to have to take care of business and keep working. But yeah, I agree with you, Greg. They're very impressive so far through 5 weeks. Can't say enough about that team. My second loser for this week is going to be a team that it pains me to say this, but Kentucky Wildcats. And the reason for it, it's not actually like to me right now, Greg, Kentucky is a team that it just has to be so frustrating to be a Wildcat fan right now. And I kind of get it a little bit as an Ohio State fan, because this is kind of how Ohio State has been operating recently up until this year. But this is a game that Kentucky could have won and probably lost about six different times, right? They had two mishandles on extra points. So there's 2 points right there. They missed a 30-yard field goal. So there's another 3 points. Okay. And on back-to-back drives to close the game, they fumbled the ball and Ole Miss got it back. So like they had opportunities, and Will Levis was playing his mind, his heart out, just absolutely electric. But the reality is the turnover bug has been biting them, and the miscue bug has been biting them up until this point. And this is the first time that, you know, they actually paid for it. So very frustrating here. But again, the reason why I brought that up and why it's so frustrating is because you take away those mistakes, and this team, in my opinion, arguably, they could play with anybody. Like, I'm circling that. If I'm a Kentucky fan, right, obviously that game against Tennessee on the road is going to be tough just because it's at Tennessee, and Tennessee looks really good right now. But if I'm a Kentucky fan, I'm circling that Georgia game. That's at home. That's at the end of the season. If Georgia is looking, if what we've seen in the past 2 weeks, you know, is kind of what to expect from Georgia and it's not a blip, if this Kentucky team can fix basically their shit, I mean, that could be a game. And Kentucky could very well play upset in that game. They just have to figure out their turnovers and consistency with mistakes. But I think there's a shell of a great team in there.
Yeah, and I mean, Ole Miss is a very formidable team as well. Lane Kiffin definitely had his guys ready. But, Kentucky surely should have won that game. I think they're a better coached team, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And I think they did enough defensively. Ole Miss wasn't, you know, pouring it on. They were keeping them in the game. But you know, you just have to finish games. There's only so many excuses you can make. So I definitely agree with you on that.
It's worth noting too, Greg, there, that they played without their defensive captain and leader, Jared Weaver, too. So like they played really well. Kentucky did.
That's when you want more from Will Levis. You're talking about a guy, top 10 potential draft pick, and I was a little cautious about that. We haven't seen the eye-popping numbers yet. We've seen you know, flashes of maybe like a Josh Allen type player, but you just have to be more consistent if you're going to be regarded as that good of a quarterback. And we just didn't see that here. So be interesting to see if they can bounce back this year, you know, maybe even put themselves in the SEC championship race. Win over Georgia would probably have to happen in that scenario, but you never know. I mean, they're a well-coached team. You know, if they're truly that well-coached, they'll be able to fix some of their issues that they're having. But for my second loser, I'm going to go with Virginia Tech. They got absolutely destroyed by UNC. They lost 41-10. I can't remember a Virginia Tech team being this bad. Year one under Brent Pry, I was expecting maybe a little bit better defensive play, you know, coming over from Penn State. Penn State's always had a good defense. I can understand if their offense isn't up to snuff, but man, UNC was moving the ball at will against them. You know, 41 points by the end of the third quarter. They also kind of let off the gas a little bit. And, you know, if you're Virginia Tech, like 10 years ago, you were the class of the ACC, and now one of the worst teams in the conference. What a fall from grace it was for them. So we'll see if Brent Pry can get his shit together. But, man, if you have even like two seasons like this, back to back, you know, 3-9, 4-8 type seasons, that might be it for him.
Yeah, I absolutely agree. We talked about this in depth when we were doing our preview. I think there's kind of a shell of a great team there as well in Tech. And they just haven't been able to put it together. That offense just looks sluggish. The defense is good, but you know, you need supplemental, you need complementary football in order to be successful in today's games. You can't just have an overwhelming unit on one side. Ask Iowa or Wisconsin how that works out. So it just doesn't work. So yeah, I definitely agree with you that is really upsetting. And hopefully they can turn it around, because that's one of those programs that you just with the atmosphere they have in Blacksburg and the history of that program, you hate to see them struggle. Like college football is better when a team like Virginia Tech is good. So, you know, I'm hoping that they can turn that around and maybe push for bowl eligibility this year. My last winner for this week, and I'm knocking on the wood so hard here, as I am praying that I don't jinx these guys and send them to my graveyard, is Mississippi State. Okay. Mississippi State, they look very good here on both sides of the ball. And I think, you know, that is a game where if you put yourself in Jimbo Fisher's shoes, those are the games that he's getting paid the big bucks to win, right? On the road, Mike Leach, vastly on paper, more talented team is A&M with what Fisher has done recruiting wise there. And yet Mississippi State comes in. Will Rogers is a dude. He is playing his life off right now, his ass off. And that defense is sneaky good. So yeah, I think this is a statement win for Mississippi State. I think this could be the start of something special for them, but they're going to have to keep playing with this intensity on both sides of the ball. And they cannot rely on that offense. I think part of the reason why they're so successful right now is they don't feel like they have to force that. You know, an air raid offense, when you feel like you have to force an air raid offense, there's not complementary defense. Sometimes throws can get forced, mistakes can be made. And once you start turning the ball over with an air raid offense, it kind of really starts to hurt the scheme. So I think as long as that defense continues to play at that level, this should be a very dangerous team in the SEC and could play upset to some potential title contenders or just SEC champion contenders.
Once again, going back to the experience thing, with both Will Rogers and their whole roster, I mean, Will Rogers probably won't be a very high draft pick, but he can sling the ball with the best of them. He puts up numbers every week. You can always count on him. And again, against a very talented A&M team, it didn't really matter. And if you're an A&M fan, you know, you got to be starting to get restless. You're not seeing results. You know, A&M has not taken that next step. When they fired Kevin Sumlin, he had a pretty good record there. They had some good years with like Johnny Manziel and Mike Evans. Could never crack the, you know, the BCS or playoff contender status. And that's what they brought Jimbo in to do. And I don't even know if they've taken the next step. I don't know if they're a better program now than they were when Kevin Sumlin got fired, which is pretty sad. You know, he's had his time, but if you're in College Station right now, you want to see some progress. And it doesn't get any easier because you got Bama this week. So that will be a very interesting game to watch. So for my third winner, I'm going to go with the Clemson Tigers. Another big win over a formidable ACC opponent in NC State. I kind of thought NC State was going to spoiler here. Clemson with a big win before, a bit of a gauntlet in the middle of their season, which they haven't been accustomed to these past 5 years. But they looked a lot better on defense than they did against Wake. You know, Devin Leary didn't take over the game like I suspected he would. And offense, you know, they're not world beaters on offense, but they're able to move the ball well enough. And that's something that they weren't able to do next year. And if you're looking at the remainder of their schedule, I don't see too many tough games. You got Syracuse in a few weeks, who's ranked in the top 25 now. If you consider at Notre Dame to be a tough game, this point. I really don't. I see too many tough games. So if you're Clemson, just gotta keep showing up every week. Play as a team, which they have been doing. I think Clemson's gonna run the table at this point. I think these past 2 weeks, I think would have been when they would have dropped a game. They're winning games that, especially against Wake, that last year they would not have won. And you can argue about whether you think they're truly like a playoff contender this year. But I'm gonna be keeping my eye on them. We'll see if they have a letdown game one of these weeks, but I think they're a very strong playoff contender.
Yeah, absolutely. So my kind of moving into the next part of this is that this was going to be my loser. So I'll just go ahead and do my loser here and then follow it up with the winner. So for those of you that obviously, if you listen to this show this year, right, I made headlines to start the season saying that NC State was going to be in the playoff this year. They were going to win this exact game. To double down on my bet, I actually bought a ticket, visited one of my good friends who goes to Clemson. I was at this game for game day and for the festivities, silently rooting for my Wolfpack to pull off the upset. And it didn't really happen, which definitely is sad. It kind of thrashes my playoff hopes here for the Pack. And I just think more so than that, Devin Leary played all right. I think both of the, he technically threw two picks. One of them got called back on a penalty. Both of them were thrown behind the receivers. Now you can make the argument zone defense, you got to be sitting in space, but they were bad throws. And I think there were times where he played really well, but unfortunately just through his own mistakes and then the inability of his team to execute around him, they just kind of got behind the eight ball there. You kind of got the feeling that through the first quarter and into the second quarter, it had that feel to it, right? Like the Pack were, they're playing well, they were playing gritty, and Clemson just kicked it into another gear that we haven't seen in a while. DJ played really well, and that line, especially on the defense, they were giving Leary hell all night, even without Breezy. So very, very impressed with Clemson as well. I agree with you, Greg. We'll have to see how the rest of their schedule plays out. I'm a little more wary than you about them running the table. I specifically point to Notre Dame and Syracuse, the games that you've discussed, as well as a sleeper Florida State away game. So I think there is still potential for them to trip up, but if they continue to improve like this, I agree with you. I think they definitely could run the table and be in CFP contention by year end. So NC State, definitely hate to see it. And since, we kind of chose that game in tandem, I'll just throw a real quick another loser in there is Minnesota. Minnesota, we were talking a big game about Minnesota, and they kind of fell flat against Purdue, and it just goes to show you how much of that team is Mo Ibrahim not playing. They just looked really flat on offense. So that sucks, but the great thing right now is that they're in arguably the most up in the air division in college football right now. So there's definitely room to kind of catch themselves and move forward. The path to the Big Ten championship is still very much in play for the Gophers, so not a big issue there. And then my final winner for this week would likely be I'm going to go ahead and give it to LSU. And the reason why I'm going to give it to LSU is because the fight that they showed to come back down 17-0 against Auburn, and more so just that defense. I think what the defense showed more than the offense in that game to come back and hold Auburn from, scoring in the second half, that's impressive. That's going to be something that LSU needs moving forward. So specifically, I'm going to say LSU defense in the second half is going to be my final winner of this week.
LSU had a bad game against Florida State. They kind of lost that game, but Florida State's a legit team, as we see, you know, almost halfway season. And already, like, halfway through year one, I mean, you can see the strides made by LSU. You know, this is a legit football team. They got a very good coach in Brian Kelly. I wasn't convinced that they would, you know, instantly be at this level. But, you know, that SEC West is just such a gauntlet. It's going to be a dogfight for the rest of this season. So, like, whoever comes out of the SEC goes to the playoffs, one or two teams, you know, they've earned it. For my loser, this one's low-hanging fruit, but I'm going to take Wisconsin here. You lose a game to Illinois, lose to your former head coach, Brett Bielema, who beats you at your own game. Power football, Chase Brown dunks on you. Their QB, who can't really throw too well, has three touchdowns within the 10-yard line. I could not believe this result when I saw this. But, hey, maybe Illinois, you know, they're a bit of a sleeper team. As we've talked about before, the West is wide open race, and every team besides Wisconsin is 1-1 in that division. Maybe we could see Illinois contend in that crazy division. I have a feeling whoever wins is going to be like 8-4 with like a 5-4 conference record, something like that. But that kind of will make it fun following that in the second half of the season. But going back to Wisconsin, this game cost Coach Paul Christ his job, which was pretty shocking news to me. Even though this is a bad result, you know, they show up flat in Columbus, you know, 2 weeks ago. I don't know if I necessarily agree with this decision at this point. The only thing I'll say regarding this is you better have a succession plan in place for him. So what they did is they promoted their defense coordinator, Jim Leonard, to be their interim coach. He's younger than 40 and already regarded as one of the top defensive minds in college football. So what I think they're doing is they want to see if he can run their program. If Wisconsin looks really good in the second half of the year, I think he gets the full-time job. If they kind of fall flat, I think they're going to give somebody a lot of money out there. You know, there's a lot of speculation right now, looking at Lance Leopold, maybe Matt Campbell. No idea to know who they're thinking about right now. But I just have this strong feeling that they would not have – this was not an impulsive fire. At least I hope it's not. Otherwise, you know, they're even bigger losers for doing that. One comparison that I've seen a lot is comparing his record to Bo Pelini's at Nebraska. I don't think Bo Pelini ever won less than 8 or 9 games when he was at Nebraska, and we've seen how much Nebraska has fallen. So, like I said, they better have a succession plan in place, or else maybe they'll see a similar fate as Nebraska.
Yeah, absolutely. And important point just to add on, you touched on everything, but Paul Christ in this situation, not a loser because he got an $11 million buyout. So homie is swimming in it, even though maybe the name gets dinged a little bit. But I do think he left a pretty good legacy for Wisconsin. He took them to some Big Ten championships. And even though, you know, maybe the performance wasn't there, I don't really think you can blame that on him per se. They were just frankly outclassed by much more talented teams. I will be interested to see, though, how this changing of the guard maybe sends a ripple through the Big Ten West. You know, we've been talking about the Big Ten as a whole and just their offensive style, their offensive scheme is starting to become a little dated in the national landscape, and it's starting to affect some of their teams, right? So you think about Michigan last year getting throttled by Georgia. You think about Iowa, the Wisconsins of the world, the teams who, you know, win, they're good enough to win the Big Ten West, but then they can never get past whoever comes out of the East, right? Or even win a bowl game. So I just think it'll be very interesting to see. I'm kind of keeping that on my radar as well to see how the offense potentially changes with this. And I don't know how much of that was on Paul Christ versus his OC. So we'll just, that's going to be something I'm going to be watching, but I agree with everything you said, Greg. Definitely a shaky time to be a Badger fan, and what an unexpected fall from grace for the Badgers. Definitely one of the more surprising and unexpected overrated teams so far this year. But yeah, I think that wraps up in terms of winners and losers. A really, really unique week five. Lots of different outcomes in terms of, you know, perceptions versus reality and upsets, overrated, things like that. One thing I do want to talk to you about, though, Greg, is as we're nearing the middle of the season here, who are some teams on your radar for the second half of the year that you're going to be paying special close attention to as potentially maybe sleepers for New Year's Six or even a college football playoff appearance, or even just contenders within their own conferences to become, you know, heading towards the championship?
Yeah. I think this is a very unique season. We've kind of touched on this before. I think there's a little bit more parity now. I don't think any team has been dominant yet and has been running through their schedule. I don't think there's a clear cut, even, you know, maybe you could say Bama, Georgia, Ohio State, are looking strong, but they don't look invincible this year. And you can make the argument, we could see an upset and potentially knocks them out of playoff contention. But there's a lot of teams still, like, you know, we talked about the Pac-12 a little bit. There's some teams there with playoff potential. And I think if, for example, a team like UCLA, they run the table, or maybe even they go 12-1, they drop a game against another strong Pac-12 team, they go on to win the conference, I think that might be enough for them to make the playoffs this year. I'm not saying I'm picking them, but I'm just using that as an example. This is just the type of season it is. Similar deal in the Big 12. You know, you got three undefeated teams in there still. Not sure that any of them will continue to be undefeated for much longer. But, you know, some kind of crazy, like, results so far. Kansas and TCU, they're going to match up this year or this week. So we'll see how they look, you know, this Saturday. CC starting to kind of see who's at the top of the pack. Clemson and Syracuse, both undefeated. A couple of teams like Wake and NC State take losses in recent weeks. And then you move on to the Big Ten. You got the Blue Bloods in the East, all undefeated, all have looked pretty good. Michigan, Ohio State, and Penn State. There's going to be some epic clashes later this season in the Eastern Division. And I have a feeling whoever wins the Big Ten, whoever comes out of the East, will probably win the Big Ten championship and go to the playoffs, even if they have a loss. So, you truly can't say there's four teams that are, you know, you lock them in, you pencil them in at this point. You just can't say that at all. And I think there's probably 14 or 15 teams still in the race at this point in the season, which is probably a lot more than it has been in recent years.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's a bunch of teams here with either no blemishes on their record or one loss that essentially just have their entire season in front of them, right? You think of a Tennessee, like Tennessee runs the table. They beat Kentucky at home. They beat Georgia. They're crowned SEC East champion. You know, obviously there's a lot of ifs there, right? They have to get through a lot of hurdles. But the point is like for teams like a Tennessee or a Kansas or a TCU, or like you said, a UCLA, like it's very interesting this year that, you know, not really a changing of the guard, but we're starting to see some new names, new faces in the college football landscape. And quite frankly, not a better perfect time for this season to occur as we're beginning to start to shift toward a 12-team playoff. I think right now, as it's setting up, and again, we still have a second half of the year, right? But if the season were to end right now, I think this would be the perfect season for a test, a guinea pig, if you will, of that new playoff system, because I don't really think you can point to a single team out of the top 12 and say, yeah, these guys are for sure way better than the rest. Like, maybe you could say that there's a tier, right, of Georgia, Alabama, Ohio State, and then maybe a second tier of like your Tennessee, Clemson, Michigan. But I think other than that, I mean, it's wide open. And so it's going to be really interesting to see how this season plays out. A couple of teams that, or I guess a couple of notes that I just wanted to add as well is Maryland is a team that is quite frankly just shocking right now. Like, wasn't really surprised with them running the table. I think when we were talking about the SMU game, I brought up their recent success in like non-conference games. So that wasn't really that surprising. But what they did against Michigan State, and I know Michigan State's an underwhelming team this year, but this is Maryland, right? Like, Maryland is the most underwhelming team usually in the Big Ten, save for maybe Rutgers. So for them to go and take care of business, like just the fact that Maryland takes care of business in that game speaks volumes to me. And they have another opportunity to do it this week and keep that train rolling in a Big Ten East that is very easily shaping up to be one of the better divisions in college football, if not the best right now. So that's pretty surprising to me. And then the only other point I want to make, and this is just more so of like satirical stuff, in my opinion, is it seems like don't you just get the sense, Greg, that like the Big 12 is basically just saying like hasta la vista to Texas and Oklahoma? Like, this season is just kind of like it's perfectly mm-hmm. writing itself up to just like give Texas and Oklahoma just like an exit stage right type phase, right? Both of them essentially were only through 5 weeks, and both of them have already taken themselves out of not only the playoff perception, but Oklahoma is, I can say with almost 100% certainty, they've played themselves out of the Big 12 championship. They're 0-2 in the Big 12. They're probably not. They need chaos. And Texas is 1-1. It's still in front of them, but you know they're going to have to win some games. So pretty wild. They're talking about this new game or this game that's coming up this weekend.
25.
Texas and Oklahoma. It's going to be like the first time in like, can't remember how many years that both teams are unranked. So yeah. So it's wild to me. And I just was sitting and thinking about it. It just kind of seems like poetic justice with the way that they just said, screw you to the Big 12. The Big 12 saying, screw you back to Texas and Oklahoma. We no longer need you. So that's pretty funny to me. Oh, yeah, and the SEC's sitting there over there like, yeah, please, yeah, come on. You can't come soon enough.
Some of these teams,
we need some cupcakes on our schedule.
You know, I don't think
you guys are certainly looking the part right now.
Playoffs, but even if they go like 8-4 and they knock off, let's say, like an Oklahoma State in a late season matchup to kick them out of the playoffs, like that's way more intriguing than college football has been. So, like, not all of these teams have to be true playoff contenders. They could still cause chaos. Some teams can make a New Year's Six Bowl, teams that nobody would have guessed at the beginning of the season.
Yeah, and again, if you're a Big Ten fan, if you're an SEC fan, okay, like these teams, like your Florida States, your Kansases, your TCUs, these are your favorite teams right now. Because exactly to your point, Greg, like these are the exact teams that could go, your UCLAs, they could go in, they can create chaos. And inadvertently, to your point, they could kick their own conference out of the playoff. So like if you're a Big Ten fan, right, specifically an OSU or a Michigan fan, there's a potential there, or even a Penn State fan, right? There's a potential there for a door opening wide open for two Big Ten teams here. If, say, a Kansas has three losses and they beat an Oklahoma State, or they take out somebody else, right? And it effectively just cancels out that entire conference. So these teams are really important to your point, even if they don't go on to be, you know, a playoff contender 4 weeks later down the road. They're just still dangerous. So it's there's more dangerous teams at this point of the year than I can remember having in recent memory. And that just makes the sport that much more exciting. It just makes the guys in Vegas that much more sweaty. So we'll see how it plays out. It's definitely going to be a fun one. And I think that we'll definitely have some crazy surprises by the end of the year. But yeah, I think that's a perfect way to kind of encapsulate how we're at right now, almost halfway through the year. So Greg, kind of looking back on this week before we
move into week six,
is there anything else that you kind
of
want to touch on?
How crazy
in general?
The second half of the season is going to be, you know, second week of conference play. We had a lot of like above average conference teams playing each other. So things are starting to take shape. But at the same time, there's still a lot of questions to be answered. So, you know, once we get past these next few weeks, it'll be you know, racing to the finish line here. You know, just like that, college football season's just about halfway over, and it's been a hell of a season so far. And that always sets it up for a great finish.
Thanks for listening to Slightly Offsides. We'll catch you next time.